tell me
KSDP, 8:30 a.m. in Sandpoint. K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove. KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay. KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass. And KKQA, 88.1 FM in Accutan, Alaska.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is making new efforts to help solve missing and murdered Indigenous persons cases. Now, the federal agency is using forensic technology to help reunite the remains of Native Americans with their families and tribal nations. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel has more.
Federal data shows there are roughly 4,200 unsolved missing and murdered Indigenous persons. The BIA is working to bring that number down with the initiative Operation Spirit Return. The agency is partnering with a Texas-based company called Othram, which uses genetic genealogy to identify human remains. Gina Jackson is Western Shoshone and an advocate. She says any resource going towards this crisis is a good thing.
But the injustices are so huge and so vast that we need some big changes. We need to be protected. And right now, Native women and girls and Native people in general are not being protected.
The BIA did not respond to an interview request. In a recent press release, the agency says it's actively investigating 15 unsolved cases across tribal lands. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Human trafficking awareness and prevention was the focus of a community discussion last week in Eugene, Oregon. Among those attending were advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Junior League of Eugene organized the event, which was sold out with more than 150 registrants attending. Among them was Amanda Freeman, a member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. She's testified in the Oregon legislature for bills to improve response and awareness of MMIP cases. Freeman also started Umpqua Advocacy last winter. It's a nonprofit organization that helps advocate for victims and their families through Native culture and practices.
I would rather save who we can by being who we are. And if we spread awareness, teach one new person one new thing, then that's something.
Freeman said she planned to talk to a presenter with the FBI on internet safety for young people. Meanwhile, organizer Sarah Koski, community resource liaison for Lane Transit District, said she was pleased with the event. She said it's an extension of a pledge LTD signed last November to help fight human trafficking.
So every one of our buses is a designated safe place for youth. We partner with Looking Glass, our downtown station, and our Springfield station as well. And what does that mean if there is a youth in crisis, if they run to our bus, how do we support them?
The Human Trafficking Hotline's 2023 data shows nearly 250 victims were involved in trafficking cases in Oregon, most of them female. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The San Carlos Apache Tribe in Arizona is offering a $75,000 reward for information in the murder case of Emily Pike. The teenager went missing in January. Her remains were later found. 12 News reports the reward was announced during a vigil held by the tribe over the weekend. Her case has drawn national attention as people from across Indian country call for justice for Emily and other MMIP cases. Tribal leaders are remembering Representative Raul Grijalva of Arizona as a champion for Native people. He died last week after battling cancer. The Hopi tribe in a statement said the congressman was a true statesman, champion of the state of Arizona, and a friend to Indian country. Among accomplishments, the tribe says he helped with clean water projects, electrification efforts, and other investments. He also recently championed a water rights settlement for Arizona tribes. Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin took to social media to honor the congressman, saying Grijalva was instrumental in protecting sacred lands, including the Grand Canyon. A candlelight vigil was held for the congressman in Tucson Sunday night. He was 77 years old. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Skugtash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods. Tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Om Ye.
Enbridge strives to be a good steward of the environment, a safe operator of essential energy infrastructure, and a good neighbor. More on Enbridge's Indigenous Reconciliation Action Plan at Enbridge.com. Enbridge proudly supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
If it is seen that we are walking away from Ukraine, if we embrace appeasement, we embolden every aggressor around the globe.
Unlike most Republicans in Congress, Senator Murkowski remains defiant of President Trump. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a tourism business in the Aleutians faces backlash from U.S. foreign policy.
That's going to be a big impact to our earned revenue, and I don't know how we'll make that one up.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If domestic violence has touched your life, know that you are not alone. You have the power to break free and build a future filled with love and respect. There's hope and help waiting for you. For free and confidential support, visit notaloneak.org to speak to someone who's trained to help. Every Alaskan deserves to feel safe. This message sponsored by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski voted on Friday with her fellow Republicans to pass a funding bill for the rest of the fiscal year. It avoids a government shutdown but gives a lot of leeway to the executive branch to decide how to spend money. Still, in other ways, Murkowski continued last week to show that she's one of the only Republicans in Congress willing to break with President Trump. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
The senator from Alaska.
Early in the week, Murkowski gave a firmly pro-Ukrainian speech on the Senate floor. In nearly 8 minutes, she never mentioned Trump by name, but it was all a rebuke of Trump's willingness to abandon Ukraine and his trust in Russian President Vladimir Putin. Murkowski says what America does now is a test of its leadership.
If we falter, others are watching. Others are watching the situation in Moscow, in Beijing, in Tehran, in Pyongyang. And so if it is seen that we are walking away from Ukraine, if we embrace appeasement, we embolden every aggressor around the globe.
Murkowski said it's in Putin's interest to break NATO apart, sever the United States from its allies. And she said here we are doing it for him. And by we, she clearly meant Trump. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky angered Trump earlier this month by insisting that security guarantees be part of any peace deal with Russia. Murkowski took the same Trump-defying stance.
We all want this war to end, but it cannot end on Russia's terms. If it does, we should expect nothing more than a temporary respite before the resumption of hostilities. Why are we going to start trusting and believing Putin's word now, given his track record? We've seen this before. History doesn't lie, and the appeasement of tyrants does not bring peace.
With its unspoken digs at Trump, it was the sort of speech that makes MAGA Alaskans furious. They call her a Republican in name only and vow retribution at the ballot box. Alaskans on the left, meanwhile, are split between lauding her courage and mocking her for what they see as talking tough but voting as Trump wants. On government funding, Murkowski said last week she had no good options. As she sees it, she had to vote for the continuing resolution, which keeps government running until September, even though Congress didn't have a chance to shape it.
I am very reluctant to support a long-term CR. I do not like the fact that it gives the executive branch the authority that we own as members of Congress when it comes to defining spending priorities. But I also cannot be part of anything that ultimately shuts this government down.
Just before she voted for the big spending bill Friday, Murkowski voted for an amendment that would have defunded the so-called Department of Government Efficiency run by Elon Musk. DOGE claims to have canceled billions of dollars in government contracts and terminated thousands of civil service jobs. The amendment sponsor, Democratic Senator Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, made it clear this was a statement against Musk and, by extension, against Trump.
The amendment's pretty simple. It says no monies may be spent on that illegal operation, which has nothing to do with government efficiency and everything to do with taking a chainsaw to important public services that help every American and to rig the government for people like Elon Musk.
Murkowski was the only Republican to vote for the Van Hollen Amendment, and it never had a serious chance of passing. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
The government of British Columbia filed legislation last week that would allow the province to levy tolls on vehicles between the lower 48 and Alaska. The bill does not automatically impose fees on vehicles traveling to and from Alaska, but it would allow BC to do so if President Donald Trump continues to escalate what are seen as threats and unjust tariffs on Canada, according to a statement from the Provincial Ministry of Transportation and Transit. In addition to threatening tariffs on trade with Canada, Trump has threatened military action against the country and has said that it should be annexed to the United States in order to avoid economic consequences. The bill is expected to advance in the legislative process no sooner than March 31st. Meanwhile, in Alaska, Republican U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan has threatened to take economic action against British Columbia. In a talk radio interview last week, Sullivan said he would seek to waive a federal law that requires foreign registered cruise ships to stop in Canada when sailing between Washington State and Alaska. All but a handful of the mega ships that carry tourists to Alaska in the summer are registered to foreign countries. The United States has already waived the law once in 2021 amid the COVID-19 pandemic emergency. Sullivan told Canada in the radio interview, quote, "You don't want to mess with Alaska." The British Columbia Transport Ministry said the cruise ship industry employs thousands of people and supports hundreds of BC businesses who benefit from the arrival of ships. And as President Donald Trump's tariffs against other nations go into effect, some international visitors are halting their summer travel to the United States. For one Aleutian business, a lack of tourists could have an outsized impact. KUCB's Taylor Heckert reports.
The Museum of the Aleutians is already getting cancellations from international visitors months before the cruise season begins. Two guests told the museum that the reason for the cancellation is, quote, "the evolving political situation between our countries," end quote. From May till September, many international cruise ships dock in on Alaska, allowing visitors to explore the island before they sail off to their next location. The Museum of the Aleutians has a gift shop and offers historical tours to those visitors. And that's huge business for the museum. Here's Museum Director Ginny Hatfield.
Yeah, so the cruise ship season is really important for us. Each cruise ship brings in about 5,000, like a minimum almost, with admissions and what they purchase. It depends on the cruise ship. The smaller ones are maybe more like $2,000. But we make, you know, $2,000 the whole month of January, right? So having that in one day is amazing.
She says many of the cruise ship visitors are non-U.S. tourists. So as international tensions rise, Hatfield worries about how the organization can financially survive.
If they decide that they need to make a point about how the rest of the world is being impacted by American policies and tariffs, that's going to be a big impact to our earned revenue, and I don't know how we'll make that one up.
According to the Unalaska Visitors Bureau, the amount of cruises stopping in Unalaska is growing. In 2008, 5 cruise ships visited the island. Fast forward to this year, and 19 cruise ships are expected to arrive. Most of them are international. As of now, not all local organizations are worried about international tourism dropping from the island. Catherine McGlashan is the executive director of the Unalaska Visitors Bureau. She wrote in an email to KUCB that the tourism trend so far has been positive, and that, quote, "I am feeling confident it will be another good season for UVB," end quote. So museum staff are just waiting to see if their cancellation notices continue to grow as it gets closer to cruise season. In Unalaska, I'm Taylor Heckert.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the 2025 Iditarod comes to a close with the last mushers making their way to Nome.
They said it was going to be boring. They said it was going to be easy. They were really wrong, because it was none of those things.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers new and transfer students a wide range of scholarships, grants, and other financial assistance. Apply for admission to be considered automatically for most scholarships, and complete your financial aid application by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
A Wasilla man was fatally shot by a police officer last night after Alaska state troopers say he fired on the officer's vehicle with an assault rifle. 34-year-old Brett George died at the scene, according to troopers. The incident began with a call at about 10 p.m. Sunday reporting a domestic disturbance at a home near Settlers Bay. Troopers say George had armed himself, then threatened two relatives at the home. As troopers and Wasilla police responded, the relatives were able to safely get away as George donned body armor and then drove away armed with the rifle. As officers pursued him, troopers say George got out and opened fire. That's when troopers say the officer returned fire, fatally striking George. No one else was injured. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation is examining the shooting, which will also be reviewed by the State Office of Special Prosecutions. Well, the standard start date for wildland fire season is normally April 1st, according to Alaska state statute, but for communities without much snow right now, it's already here. The state issued a public order earlier this month declaring an early start to fire season in parts of Alaska, including all of Southeast. Other affected areas include much of Southwest and South Central Alaska. Lily Coyle is with the Alaska Division of Forestry and Fire Protection. She says dry or warmer weather conditions and low to no snowpack means there's a higher risk of wildland fires happening, so fire managers are starting the season a few weeks earlier than usual. She says this has never happened before.
This is the first time we've had to do an early fire season just because of how early the snow melted off in parts of Alaska.
Coyle says the dead grass and brush that's normally seen in May is already exposed.
Wildland firefighters and the state and across Alaska, really, we've been getting ready all winter and all spring for fire season. It is here earlier than we're used to seeing it. There's already been a couple responses in the Mat-Su and Kenai areas, but we do just really need the public's help and support right now and doing everything they can to be careful, be cautious, and prevent human-caused fires.
The season officially starts today, and with it come burn permit requirements. Alaskans are warned to be extra careful during the season, whether recreating or doing yard work. Coyle says burn permits are an educational tool for preventing fires and protecting Alaskans. People with burn permits call the state's hotline to check on the fire risk level for their area on that day and to learn if it's okay to burn or not. Burn permits are free and available from the state or through some municipalities.
You don't need to return them to anybody, but you need to have it signed and dated, just acknowledging that you contacted that hotline number and that you are following those guidelines.
Coyle says the state can issue warnings and citations for noncompliance. For some communities, there are alternatives available for when burning is not an option, like dropping off woody debris at a local disposal site. You can get burn permits online from forestry.alaska.gov/burn. For decades, the Bering Sea's herring fishery thrived, not because Americans were eating the fish, but because crab fishermen use it for bait. Now, with the decline of the crab industry, herring fishermen are facing their own challenges. The Alaska Desk's Theo Greenlee was in Sand Point last summer, where he toured one of the last boats still fishing herring in the Bering Sea.
Yep. I got it right there, Jane. Chalk to us.
The 58-foot seiner, the Taurus, is anchored up in Sand Point in the Eastern Aleutians. Captain Dan Vierhusen and his wife Jane are setting up a dewatering device they use to pump their catch into the boat's hold.
Got her good? Okay, where's number three?
The Taurus is one of the few remaining boats that's still fish herring in the region. It's June 2024, and Verhoosen is about to go out for his 30th or so herring season.
I love herring fishing. It's real fishing. Well, in Dutch Harbor, came out in 88. It was a regular competitive fishery, but these days there's ourselves, another boat, maybe three boats out there.
The fishery boomed in the early 20th century, but it was hurting after World War II. That is, until it was rescued by the Bering Sea crab boom in the 70s, when crabbers started buying herring for bait. Now, that fishery's been on the decline as well. King crab shut down in 2021, followed by snow crab the next year.
Crab fishing was our main customer. And with a crab going to heck, then there goes your market.
Snow crab opened this season for the first time since its closure 2 years ago. But it's the smallest allowable catch in the fishery's history, not enough to make much difference for the Taurus. Now, some parts of the state have weathered the herring market downturn, like near Sitka, where there's still demand for the area's sacro, herring eggs sold mainly to Japan. But the sacro market has been on the decline as well. That fishery used to be huge in Togiak, but sacro is not as popular today among younger generations in Japan, and the Togiak fishery hasn't opened since 2022. Verhoosen has been trying to promote herring to Americans as more than just bait, but it remains a niche market in the U.S.
And the Europeans are nuts over them, but the U.S. just hasn't developed a taste for it.
Europe is the world's largest consumer of herring, most of which is fished in the North Atlantic. But those herring stocks have declined in recent years, while Alaska stocks remain strong. Bruce Schockler wants into that market. He's the marketing chairman for United Fishermen of Alaska, which promotes the state's commercial fishing industry.
The herring that dominates the world market of food in the North Atlantic is on the decrease. So we're all thinking there could be some opportunity for Alaska herring.
Schockler says buyers from Japan, Iceland, and Europe have expressed interest. Verhoosen would love to enter that market, but without a supply chain in place, getting Alaska herring onto foreign dinner plates remains a challenge.
The shipping cost is so much to get it to Europe that by the time you get it there, there's no value in it.
Verhoosen finished his 2024 season about 200 miles west of Sand Point in Unalaska. Just across the bay from the Taurus, you can see the wooden remnants of Unalaska's last herring plant.
Those red buildings over there by the bridge, that was a herring saltery.
Manson's herring saltery thrived for the first part of the 20th century, but today, rotten wooden planks and rusted metal roofs lay in disrepair. The town was bombed during World War II. The saltery wasn't hit, but it still didn't survive.
The military filled in all the grasslands where they used to lay their eggs, and they kind of ruined the breeding grounds.
Three boats entered the fishery last year, according to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Fish and Game says it's too early to know how many boats will enter the fishery this year. The season is expected to open in the spring. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
GCI, keeping schools and students connected across the state with a resilient and redundant network. Details at gci.com/education. Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to healthcare in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A Alaskans 16 years and older would be able to consent to talk therapy if the state Senate passes a bill lowering the age of consent from 18. A parent or guardian would still need to consent to any medications. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Giesel, an advanced practice registered nurse, sponsored the bill. She screens Anchorage children and teens for mental health issues and says only about a third of parents consent when their kids request therapy.
I believe that students have a real understanding of their need for assistance, their need for counseling, their desire to talk to someone about the struggles they're having.
Typically, Giesel says major mental health challenges start around age 14. Sometimes kids turn to harmful coping strategies like using nicotine, alcohol, or drugs.
By helping them early, we can head off more advanced issues later in their teen years or even adult years.
Most states allow minors to consent to mental health care. Several allow kids to consent at age 14 and two states at age 12. Critics of the bill worry that therapists working with younger students will encourage them to identify as transgender without parental knowledge. But peer-reviewed research has shown that kids do not identify as transgender because of so-called social contagion. And experts say the United States is in the midst of a youth mental health crisis. Giesel says she sees that in her work.
Prior to COVID, I rarely had a student share significant anxiety, depression, or even suicidal ideation. During and after COVID, it has increased significantly more. And I think it's a reflection really of what's going on in our society. But I also think that parents are becoming less and less engaged with their kids.
Giesel says parents and guardians are the best people to talk to their kids about mental health struggles, and the bill is designed to include them. As written in the bill, therapists would be required to notify parents and guardians of the therapy after 5 sessions. That's unless the therapist and youth decide it's unsafe or will threaten their care. Giesel says the bill will soon head to the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, where there will be an opportunity for public comment. Every year, dozens of organizations and businesses around the Central Kenai Peninsula come together for Project Homeless Connect. The one-day event, which was held in January, makes resources available to people experiencing homelessness. As KDLL's Ashlyn O'Hara reports, organizers have finished synthesizing data from this year's event.
Reporting back to the Soldotna City Council late last month, Leslie Rohr said the event drew more than 100 participants this year. That's slightly down from last year and significantly down from the years leading up to the COVID-19 pandemic.
We had a packed house at the Project Homeless Connect event. We had 31 or 32 vendors. We couldn't fit another person in there.
Rohrer is the executive director of Love, Inc., an interdenominational Christian nonprofit that helps put on the event each year. Beyond providing resources, Project Homeless Connect also serves as a crucial collection point of data on homelessness that gets sent to the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development.
So our 2025 point in time count, the question was asked for January 27th, where did you sleep last night? And this count is done across the country.
This year's participants represented nearly 200 total household members. A majority of participants said they have some type of disability, and more than a quarter said they're currently living with friends or family. A third of attendees reported experiencing homelessness for the first time, while another third have been homeless multiple times. And for the first time this year, Rohr says they collected data on how many people were homeless due to living in seasonal or short-term rentals. That was about 16%. At the Soldotna City Council meeting, Rohr paused on a chart showing vertical red, blue, and green bars.
The green line is they're living someplace that's not meant for human habitation. And again, this year, having more people living in uninhabitable places is alarming.
Groups on the Central Kenai Peninsula have tried for years to open an emergency cold weather shelter. In 2022, Rohr helped open the doors to the Nikiski Shelter of Hope, which houses people experiencing homelessness on a temporary transitional basis. Since the shelter opened, Rohr says it's served more than 200 adults and nearly 5 dozen children. But she says the need for an emergency shelter hasn't gone away. That's as indicated by this year's Project Homeless Connect participants.
75% stated if an emergency cold weather shelter existed, they would use it.
With Rohr's report came the latest federal data on housing wages and affordability. Housing is considered affordable if it takes up less than 30% of a household's total income. The fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment in Alaska is almost $1,500, and the so-called housing wage is almost $30 per hour.
$28.61 is what's considered a housing wage for the state, and not very many of our people make $28.61.
Alaska's minimum wage is increasing to $13 per hour in July, less than half of that housing wage. It's going to increase to $15 per hour by 2027 under a ballot measure approved by voters last year. Rohr told the city council that she and other organizers are already looking ahead to next year's Project Homeless Connect event. She says they're excited to move to the new Soldotna Fieldhouse, scheduled to open this summer, which will be able to accommodate more people and more services. Reporting in Soldotna, I'm Ashlyn O'Hara.
The 2025 Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race came to a close today with news that the last musher on the trail, rookie Jenny Rodewig, had called it quits before reaching Nome. Just 22 of the 33 mushers that entered the race reached the finish, a new low for the past decade of the long-distance sled dog race. It was an unusual year across the board for the Iditarod. The official restart moved to Fairbanks for the fourth time ever. Mushers took on the longest course in race history, and this year's champion Jesse Holmes set the slowest course time for the winner in over two decades. On top of that, mushers like Mila Porsild faced a sandstorm in the early part of the race.
They said it was going to be boring. They said it was going to be easy. They were really wrong, because it was none of those things. And this is one of the experiences I've had that most made me appreciate the perseverance and strength of the dogs in front of us.
Rookie musher Emily Ford made history as just the second black woman to complete the Iditarod. At Sunday night's finishers banquet in Nome, she thanked the countless volunteers that made the race possible.
I know you guys get as much sleep as the mushers do, which is zero. And so thank you for being there for us, greeting us, and pretending that you're excited to see us, even though I know you wish you were in bed or doing something else, maybe with your eyes closed.
Despite the hardships, mushers said this year's race came with moments of beauty, too. Third place finisher Paige Drobny said a meteor perked her team up while taking a break along the Bering Sea.
And it was burning bright, huge. It was red, white, and blue, and green. And all the dogs looked at it. I looked at it, and they all looked at me, and I looked at them, and I was like, whoa. And they were like, yeah, we all saw that. That was crazy.
Rookie Eb Pedersen claimed the Red Lantern Award for being the last musher to reach Nome, arriving with his 12 dogs early this morning. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Taylor Heckart and Theo Greenlee in Unalaska, Chris Clinton, Rachel Cassandra in Anchorage, Olivia Rose in Petersburg, Ashlyn O'Hara in Soldotna, and Ben Townsend in Nome. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. We had production help tonight from Wesley Early, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training. ConocoPhillips Alaska, committed to Alaska for more than 50 years. Northern Air Cargo, providing cargo transportation to 9 Alaska communities. NAC offers options including cargo charters to get freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.
Yeah. Jack Knight in Dakota House. All we wanna do is make you bounce. Monifa, could you turn me out? Show me what your thing is all about. Jack Knight in Dakota House. All we wanna do is make you bounce. Monifa, could
And if you know how I like it, would you call my name and give it to me right?
Well, I woke up this morning, my biscuit roll had gone. Well, I come here, baby, sit down, daddy, please. Well, I come here, baby, sit down, daddy, please. I wanna tell you.
Joke, and I'm so mend. I feel so far from where I've been, so I go, and I will not be back here again. I'm gone as the day is fading on white houses. I lied, but my injury.
Make my way down to the lobby. get a bite to eat and a cup or two of coffee. Read USA Today front to back. Kill most of the morning doing that. Then take that lonely walk back to the room. Watch reruns off and on all afternoon. Things to do in Wichita. So many things I can't count them all. Find a way to bring her back. Find the words to let her know that I've changed, I really have. Hit redial on the phone. Leave another message at her mom's. Tell her, baby, you were right and I was wrong. I hope and pray and wait for her to call. I've got things to do in Wichita. Around sundown, now that's when things get tough. And gotta work to keep my strength and courage up. There's a happy hour in the bar downstairs. She'd be proud to know I ain't set foot in there. Spend my life trying to be a better man. Reading from that book in my nightstand. Things to do in Wichita. So many things I can't count them all. Find a way to bring her back. Find the words to let her know that I've changed, I really have. Hit redial on the phone. Leave another message at her mom's. Tell her, baby, you were right and I was wrong. Hope and pray and wait. I've got things to do in Wichita. Tell myself to just stay strong. Kill the lights and lay here all alone. Say a prayer that tomorrow she might call. I've got things to do in Wichita.
Treasured union as we stop, and it makes you think about the sweet things love can bring. Cause you never know with life. So hold on, hold on to my love. To be here, to be here before your eyes. You're in love to get me high. And I wanna tell the whole wide world to hold on, hold on to my love.
See the young man sitting in the old man's bar, waiting for his turn to die. The cowboy kills the rock star, and Friday night's gone too far. The dim light hides the years on all the faded girls, forgotten but not. Drink it off your mind to talk about the world like it's someplace that you've been. You see, you love to run home, but you know you ain't got one, cause you're living in a world that's your best forgotten round here. Broadway is dark tonight, a little bit weaker than you used to be. Broadway is dark tonight. Gonna listen to the one small point. Another business around.